Changed panels for our second case, so this case will be heard by Justice Mark Pittman to my right, Justice Dabney Basil to my left, and I'm Lee Gabriel. So the clerk may go ahead and call the case. Mr. Baker.
If it pleases the court, counsel. This case is about whether the trial court erred by granting the appellee's petition for non-disclosure. The state will start off with two jurisdictional arguments. The first being a person may petition the court under Texas Government Code 411-0736 for a non-disclosure order within 3 years if he has an interlock on his vehicle for 6 months following his conviction, but he must wait 5 years if he did not have that same interlock on his vehicle for that 6 months. The state believes the appellee failed to satisfy the five-year waiting period imposed by the statute.
What's your response that you waived that by not raising it to the trial court?
I don't think that issue is waivable. It's a jurisdictional issue. At least that's the state's position, and subject matter jurisdiction is not something that's waivable.
Is the failure to conform to a statute the same thing as the lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
I believe so. Well, so, and could you actually repeat the question, Justice?
Is the failure, it strikes me the Supreme Court's been moving to, in a trend that simply failing to conform to a statute is not the same thing as a lack of subject matter jurisdiction, because we're trying to avoid having void judgments.
Well, I believe in this case the failure to conform to the statute, let me put it this way, the petitioner had the burden to prove everything in the statute. Before you can bring a petition like this, you have to wait 5 years. We believe the petitioner in this case had to wait 5 years. Because the petitioner didn't wait 5 years, the court did not have the power to grant the remedy that the petitioner was seeking. I believe that falls under, that's a jurisdictional, I believe it's subject matter. I think he availed himself of personal jurisdiction when he filed the petition. I believe it's subject matter because we're talking about a non-disclosure. I can see the differences there, but however we want to phrase it or look at it, I believe that the court just did not have the power to do what the petitioner wanted him to do.
But if it's not a jurisdictional issue, you might have waived it. It's possible to waive a non-jurisdictional issue.
That is possible. I see your reasoning there. Yes, sir. Here the record shows, and this is why we believe that the five-year waiting period applies, the record shows no evidence that Appley maintained the interlock device on his vehicle for 6 months, at least what the state could find in the record. There's just nothing there. There's nothing in the clerk's record itself or what actually took place at the hearing to show that an interlock device was on this vehicle for 6 months. And the petitioner did not elicit testimony or evidence at the non-disclosure hearing showing that the interlock device had been on the vehicle for 6 months. Actually did not provide, at least from what the state could see, any evidence at all showing that the statutory waiting period had passed. And the state gets this from following the appellee's conviction in May of 2014, his license was suspended for an additional month. It had already been suspended during dependency of the case. The appellee was actually given credit for the time that his license had been suspended following the ALR hearing, and after his conviction was given, was suspended an additional month. In that order, or actually the order giving him his occupational license, there is a order to maintain an interlock device, but that order only lasts for 1 month. I believe it's from June 2014 until July 2014. After that, there's no evidence at all that an interlock device stayed on the car. Like I said, there's no evidence. There's no testimony saying the interlock was on the car for 6 months, and because it wasn't on for 6 months, we believe that the applicable waiting period was 5 years. Therefore, when he actually filed this petition in 2018 and was premature, he should have had to wait till at least 2019 to file that petition. So accordingly, the state, under that first argument, would request this court vacate the trial court's judgment granting appellee's nondisclosure. And the alternative, at least, send it back to the trial court for the trial court to determine, to make a determination whether that five-year time period applied. Additionally, this court has jurisdiction to hear this appeal because the amount in controversy exceeds $250. This court's jurisdiction, as you know, must be based on a general constitutional grant subject to any restrictions or regulations imposed by the legislature or a specific statutory grant. There is no specific statutory grant in the nondisclosure statute, unlike the expunction statute where there is. So the legislature has limited the jurisdiction to court of appeals to cases in which the amount of controversy of judgment exceeds $250. And that can be found under Texas Civil Practice and Remedy Code 51.012. Amount of controversy, at least according to Toon v. Texas, and that's a Texas Supreme Court case from 2000, and we used that case in our brief, means the sum of money or value of the thing for which the suit was brought defines amount in controversy. Courts of appeals have applied Toon and found that the amount of controversy had been satisfied when a petitioner for a nondisclosure had been denied employment and had lost thousands of dollars. Not, they didn't make a particular finding in that case. And that case was Harris v. State. And also when a petitioner sought a disclosure so he could apply for a job for a private school. And that case is Scritchfield v. State. And we cite both those cases, and I believe that the appellee cites those cases as well. And in courts, including this one, have dismissed appeals on jurisdictional grounds where there, nothing in the trial court's record provided that the amount of controversy exceeded $250. We don't believe that's the case here. There was testimony from the appellee in this, or actually the appellee at the nondisclosure hearing, that he was worried about a background check and how that would affect his opportunity for advancement at his current job. On cross-examination by the state, he testified that the value of receiving his nondisclosure would be worth more than $250. He said that it would be worth more than $250. The state believes this testimony was enough to give this court jurisdiction to hear the state's appeal. Now we'll move on to what actually punishable means, or at least what the state believes punishable means.
I was most curious about this portion of your argument.
Yes, sir.
Something that attracts my attention when I read a brief, and I'm see the state in your brief, you're asking us to look to the bill analysis. Why should we look to the bill analysis and not to the plain language of the law?
Well, because I believe that if we, or the state believes, that if you follow the reasoning of the appellee in this case, meaning that even though there was evidence of 0.15 of a breath test of over 0.15, if you follow the appellee's argument that he should be entitled to a nondisclosure even though there was evidence of a breath test over 0.15, that would mean that before the DWI statute was amended in 2011, that persons convicted before then that had BACs high above or more than 0.15 would also be given nondisclosures. And we don't, and so we believe that would lead to an absurd result. And under the case law, if something would lead to an absurd result, you can go look at extratextual factors.
Do we have to look at the extratextual factors to come to the result that you want?
Justice Pittman, we don't believe you do. We believe the language is clear, that if the legislature had wanted to limit it to convictions, they would have said convictions. They wouldn't have said punishable.
And in this case, we don't have the word conviction in the law. We only have what the evidence shows.
That's right. Specifically, this is the way the statute reads. This section applies only to a person who, and again, this is 411.0736, to a person who is convicted of offense under section 4904 Penal Code other than offense punishable under subsection D of that section. Now, the argument usually goes like this, and I believe the appellee in this case is making this argument as well. Well, the first part of that says conviction. So if you're talking about a conviction, then clearly this person wasn't convicted under a Class A. They're convicted under Class B. Therefore, you don't even look at 4904. Well, this is a civil remedy, right? This is completely different from the criminal case. It doesn't matter that the state prosecutor pled it down from a Class A to a Class B.
but it wasn't punishable as a Class A. You look at the judgment, it says it was a Class B. You look at the plea bargain form, it says it's a Class B. In fact, this judge didn't even follow the state's punishment recommendation and did something different, but she could not have punished it as a Class A, could she?
Well, I could say the judge actually could, because the judge probably could have rejected the plea agreement and could
What he was pleading guilty to, she could not have punished him as a Class A.
That's correct, because that's what it was pled down to. It was only punishable.
It was only punishable as a Class B.
That's correct. But again, the state thinks that there is a difference between going looking at the civil nondisclosure statute and the criminal statute. And I believe if the language of 4904D, and if, let me find that language in my states. So let's look at 411.0736, and it says, this section applies, again, to a person other than an offense punishable under subsection 4904D. Section 4904D in the Penal Code states that if it is shown on the trial of an offense under this section, the analysis of a specimen of a person's blood, breath, or urine showed an alcohol concentration level of 0.15 or more at the time the analysis was performed.
But that's not what he pled guilty to.
He didn't. But he also didn't challenge the blood specimen and has never challenged the blood specimen of 0.17.
So really, our analysis is more of the government code section than the penal code section, isn't it?
Well, the two together. But yes, the government code is what the nondisclosure statute is.
What does it mean when it says punishable? That's really what this boils down to.
Absolutely. If we get that far. The state doesn't think we get that far because we think there's that jurisdictional problem.
And punishable when? Prior to the time of the conviction? Was he still punishable after he was convicted under 4904? Did I get that right?
I cannot say with a straight face that he would be punishable. Let me put it this way. So say someone is convicted of a Class B misdemeanor. The state prosecutor reduces it from a Class A to Class B, okay? The judge can still put certain restrictions that are the same restrictions that he would put on a person convicted of a Class A, if he so chooses. So you can still punish it like a Class A, but
not the same range of punishment is available.
That's true. That's true. And I think we've already covered this, based on my conversation or my answer to Justice Pittman's question, but the Texas legislature never intended for an appellee to apply for a nondisclosure. And again, the state will rely on its brief, the analysis of the House Bill 3016 dated 7/31/2007. If the meaning of a text would lead to an absurd result or the text is ambiguous, extratextual factors may be considered. We believe that the statute is clear, but extratextual factors may be looked at because that would give those persons that were convicted of DWI crimes before 2011 the opportunity to get a non-disclosure. And if you do look at that House Bill 3016, the bill analysis for House Bill 3016, the state believes that the legislature is clear, and this is to allow for a non-disclosure for first-time low-level DWIs. No DWIs with a BAC of 0.15 above. So regardless of what the person was actually convicted of, the state legislature did not intend for someone with a BAC over 0.15 to qualify for a non-disclosure.
Wouldn't the argument be if that's what the state legislature meant, they should have wrote the statute that way? Just a hypothetical. How do you respond to that?
How do I respond to that? Well,
what I'm meaning by that is what we want to guard against is this court making law rather than just interpreting the law. And if we have to insert words into the statute or omit words to get where you want us to go, we're probably not doing our job as a court.
Well, then I think that my response to that, then they could also have used the word conviction if they really wanted to limit a nondisclosure to circumstances only when a person was convicted of a Class A misdemeanor.
And again, because they use the word punishable, you think it that's the reason you can get there on your argument?
Yes, sir. Okay. And let me look at my notes to make sure that I've covered everything. State has finished its argument for this portion.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Daniel.
Court counsel. My name is Mark Daniel. I'm here on behalf of SM. I've been very careful not to mention his names. I'm not supposed to in a non-disclosure case, but SM is now 27 years old. When he was 22, he was arrested in Hearst, Texas. The offense of DWI, he provided a breath specimen that showed levels of 0.18 and 0.7, I believe. He has worked in the financial industry as an accountant with a firm here in Fort Worth. He is now in the investment side of a financial operation. And he is here because he went to the trial court back in June of this year, of 2018, and secured an order granting him non-disclosure of a DWI matter. And the core issue before this court, pure and simple, is how do we interpret a statute that's very simple, has a plain meaning, it's straightforward, it's clear, it's easy to understand? Or do we want to apply some strained interpretation to that same statute? And as y'all been discussing, the statute is section 411.076 of the government code. And frankly, it just came into law here a little over a year and a half ago. Legislature in 2017 decided that we need to look at certain DWI matters and decide if a person, if they would met certain conditions, they could later on seek to non-disclose that and maybe seal that from public view, not law enforcement, not prosecutorial view, but public view. We have to begin, though, with the jurisdiction of this court. And this court, as this appeal started back in July of 2018, actually invited discussion from counsel to address that. I don't need to go through the parameters of that with you. It all flows from Article 5, Section 6 of the Constitution. You must either come with a general constitutional grant of authority, or you must have some specific grant of statutory appeal rights. And as Mr. Baker conceded, there's nothing in the Chapter 411 of the Government Code that gives appellate rights. So you then go to the Government Code and Texas Practice Remedies Code. And I know y'all are much more familiar with those than I am, but you look to values. And do we have what's the amount of controversy? Party A sues Party B for $1,000. That's the amount of controversy. That's easy. Or then you look at the thing, and that's where the questions in the hearing to Mr. SM were, hey, do you think this is worth some advantages in employment, workforce? So yes, I do. You think it might help the interest? Oh, yes, I do. That doesn't create a thing of value.
Counsel, the question was, do you agree that getting this non-disclosure would be worth more than $250 to you?
Absolutely. That's the exact question, Your Honor. And his answer was yes, obviously. But that doesn't make it a thing of value. That makes it a right that you seek statutorily to have that legal proceeding sealed up from the public getting on the internet or the public coming to the courthouse and accessing public records. It's a right. It's not a thing of value. It has no, you can't place a monetary value on it. And we provided a number of cases.
So it's your position that he has a right to bring the suit, but they don't have the right to appeal it?
There's not a statutory appeal within the statute, Your Honor.
If it's worth more than $250, they can appeal it.
Yes, ma'am.
So I just go back to my original question. It's your position that your client had the right to file the suit, but this court doesn't have any jurisdiction to hear their appeal because it was worth more than $250 to him so he could bring the suit, but that doesn't give them the right to appeal.
Yes, ma'am. That's exactly what Mills' case told us coming out of Beaumont, that was a speculative situation where you're speculating it may be worth $250 in future endeavors.
Well, the testimony in that case was a bit different, was it not? It wasn't absolutely. It's worth more than $250.
testimony was very similar. Specifically, the case out of Harris, you had a trial court finding where the trial court made a finding of value of $250, thus rendering that, I guess, the thing they made having that value. But there was no such finding in this case. There was that, those two questions. Taking it further as we journey past that, because we are standing before this court today, and you look at 411.076, as this court's already inquired of the felon's counsel, it says convicted of. It doesn't say the original charge was something that might have been reduced. It doesn't say the charge might have been changed. The legislature didn't venture off into that language. They said convicted of an offense other than something punished under 4904D, which is the enhanced blood or breath alcohol over 0.15. If the legislature had meant for this to apply to every offense that began with an alleged breath or breath alcohol level concentration over 0.15, they'd have said that. And I think there's probably a reason for that. If I want to say this in the right way, I'm confident this court is familiar with Texas alcohol breath testing regulations. And if someone is arrested for DWI and taken to a law enforcement agency and offered to take a breath test, they don't take one, they take two. That renders a valid test on DPS regulations. There's a small little aspect of having an O2O agreement. If I'm in that situation, my first test is, say, a 0.151, but my next test can be down at 131, and that's still considered a valid cumulative test for that breath test. So in that instance, is that person sort of entitled to non-disclosure? But he is down here, but up here he's not. So which one is it? In blood cases, every single blood result has a plus or minus value on the result, typically plus or minus 0.02. So if I'm arrested and have a 0.151 blood, the results themselves say it's subject to plus or minus 0.02. I have seen so many blood results that there are issues and problems with. I don't mean to share personal experience. I'm journeying to Austin tomorrow with a Forensic Science Commission assignment. We have 19 complaints we hear tomorrow. 8 of those involve blood cases where there's problems with results coming out of laboratories. There's a laboratory in El Paso, I will not mention the technician's name, where there were some manipulation of results that we're investigating. So to take the state's argument of every time something starts out over a 1.5, it all depends on how it ends up. And that's exactly what the legislature contemplated.
If I could, sir, I'm sorry. Is your client still punishable at this point in time under subsection D of 49.04?
No, sir, not even close. The state of Texas waived that.
Okay.
And could never again proceed under that provision.
Okay, well, let's say they didn't waive it. Let's say there's not a waiver argument. He's entered into this plea agreement. You don't have this waiver argument about what's in the plea documents. Once he's pled to it, is he still punishable under subsection D?
No, sir.
Okay. If he's not punishable at that point in time under subsection D, why is this language in here? What time period is it referring to as being punishable if he's no longer punishable after he's pled to it?
Your Honor is talking about the proceeding itself and the range of punishment that would be assigned.
No, I'm talking about why is this phrase after the comma in here? Punishable when?
Punishable as a charged offense that is proceeding to trial.
So okay.
By plea or whether it's by a full-blown contested trial. And once that's waived, it is no longer punishable, which the state of Texas did seek to waive that particular provision under 4904D, which was the enhanced provision of alcohol concentration over a 1.5. And again, there can be all kind of reasons that's done. It might be part of a plea negotiation. It might be part of a problem with a breath result or a problem with a blood result. But when it's done, it's no longer punishable. Therefore, 4904 does not apply. Therefore, 11.076 which says must be convicted, and that's exactly what the legislature said. And I don't want to spend a great deal of time trying to tell this court how to interpret statutes. Y'all, I can tell from your questions, you're already familiar with legislative history and when you can and when you can't. When you have a statute that has plain, unambiguous meaning, you don't go delve into the legislative intent, the legislative history, the legislative purpose. And frankly, that's a lot of banter. Different people in different committees have different thoughts. So you're going to say, you know, Senator Smith felt this way and Representative Jones felt this way. So be it. But the what comes out of the wash was must be convicted of. SM was convicted of the lower level offense on a Class B misdemeanor, and therefore he'd be entitled. We'd ask that the...
But he was convicted. You're not arguing he was not convicted under Section 49.04.
Was convicted under 4904, not under 4904D.
I'm with you. But it says other than an offense punishable under Section D of that section. So punishable when? He's no longer punishable once he's convicted. So doesn't that mean that the word punishable has to refer to a temporal time period before the conviction?
No, sir, not at all.
Why not?
Because you have presumption of innocence and you have a charge brought by the state of Texas that was under the lesser offense of a Class B. The state of Texas stood up in a courtroom and waived that proceeding on that particular complaint.
It was no longer punishable
from that point forward.
But my question is simply at what to what time period does the word punishable refer? Maybe I'm judicially amending the statute, but isn't he potentially punishable before the conviction is entered?
He would have been punishable during the pendency of the matter.
Okay, and he's no longer punishable under subsection D once he's convicted.
Even before that, once the state makes that waiver, he's no longer punishable under the enhanced provision.
Okay.
Or thereafter. So I appreciate the court granting oral argument on this matter. I would respectfully request the trial court's order and grant of non-disclosure be upheld. Thank you.
Baker.
I want to go back to what Justice Basil was just questioning the appellee about. It makes it an excellent point, something that I had thought about it until you asked the question. And why does that even need to be there in the statute? Why is it even in the non-disclosure statute? If someone can't be punished for something that he wasn't convicted of, then why even use that language in the first place? Why not just say convicted? Unless someone was convicted of a Class A DWI misdemeanor, you know, this person is eligible for a non-disclosure. And that's up for this court, obviously, to determine. And maybe because there are two ways to look at it, that does show that there's some ambiguity, and you should look at the legislative history, which again shows that this non-disclosure is for low-level DWIs. It doesn't say anything about what a person was ultimately convicted of DWI, Class A. It says that for low-level DWI, just because a state prosecutor decides for whatever reason to reduce something, and I don't know why the state prosecutor did that in this case. I'm not saying they did something wrong. I'm just saying they decided to reduce it. That's the plea deal they reached with the appellee, and he was convicted of a Class B misdemeanor. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't punishable before that. I mean, the plea paperwork is... Go ahead.
Once he entered his plea of guilty to Class B misdemeanor, that's before the conviction, entered a plea of guilty, evidence took place. When the judge rendered her decision in that case, it could not be for a punishment anything higher than the range of punishment for Class B without busting the plea.
Can't disagree with that definition of punishable. If we're just talking about punishable at that point. But as Justice Basil was saying, I think that punishable in this, or maybe was saying, I don't know. It was just a question. But the state would say that punishable maybe has... more meanings than just the punishable as we traditionally understand it. Not traditionally, but just punishable after something, after a conviction. The appellee also, I think he said, and I don't want to mischaracterize what he was saying, but I believe he was saying that the state waived this 0.17 or over 0.15 when it came to the split agreement. Just because the state agreed to a reduced conviction doesn't mean that it's waivable for a non-disclosure. Again, a non-disclosure is separate from the criminal conviction, and the state would say that if anything was waived, it was whenever the if you look at the plea paperwork, there's some things that are crossed out, there's some things that are initialed. The defendant signed the plea paperwork and his signature's on that plea paperwork, and there's nothing crossed out on the breath test of 0.17. So if anything was waived, the appellee waived that and still to this day has never challenged that and never asserted in his petition for non-disclosure at the hearing that his blood alcohol level was below a 0.15. And unless the justices have any more questions, the state will once again request that this court vacate the trial court's judgment granting appellee's non-disclosure.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Your case is submitted. We appreciate your argument.